Hi, everybody. Welcome. It's time for Atomic Radio Hour, the post-nuclear podcast. I am your host, Vince. How are you? You look fantastic. If you like the show, it's brought to you by the Gloomin' Entertainment Patreon. There's a link in the description below. Go ahead and check that out. There's a couple options while you're there to check out, one of them being a live studio audience. And while we're talking about a live studio audience, there will not be a live episode next week. If everything goes correctly, and I think it should, I finally have access back into my desktop, and I should have an episode pre-recorded that will be then edited for you for the following week. Welcome to the show. My name is Vince. Thank you for being here. Another friend of mine has died. 2024 is just coming for everything I love near and dear. You've probably seen the news. It was all over the place. Game Informer is finally shutting its doors. They're stopping the publication 33 years after they have started. I have a lot of very fond memories of Game Informer. Immediately, the one that sticks out to me for some reason is the Saints Row 2 one. I'll see if I can put it behind me. I think there was a Saints Row 2 one. That one I remember being big. I think there was a DJ Hero one. That one was big for me. But I think the one that sticks out for most people, if not almost everybody, is the Arkham City one. Arkham City being one of my favorite games of all time. One of the worst cover arts ever for Arkham Asylum, especially the Game of the Year edition, is just atrocious. Like, that's one where I think it's okay to print a custom sleeve. Anyway, the whole white theme that Arkham City went for, at least in my memory, that everything was contrasted by it being white. Like, I think of Batman and Catwoman. They're shutting it down. And I remember the excitement. I actually remember one of my first memories of Kyle. Buddy, if you let me know if you listen to this one, if you remember this, is him having... They came out in 2011. I was a freshman in high school. So I might have been 7th or 8th grade. Probably 8th grade. Him coming in with the Game Informer for Skyrim. And I remember him being excited for sprinting. And him telling me, dude, they're sprinting in the game. That means the world is going to feel bigger. If it wasn't him, it was my buddy Lou who said something. But I have very, very fond memories of Game Informer. It was just the thing. You got GameStop points for getting them, but they also used your GameStop points to make sure you kept getting Game Informer. Game Informer was one of those things that I feel like I just had. It was very comfortable for a very long time. I don't know whatever happened with it. I couldn't tell you if it was, I mean, obviously it was still being published, but I don't know whatever happened to my copies. They just stopped at a certain point. I also stopped buying games. Pretty much 2014, 2015, 2016, I stopped playing games for a while. I kind of went through a hiatus. That was also the switching of generations from the 360 PS3 to the Xbox One and PS4, which I think is one of the worst generational gaps ever. It feels like from the PS1 to PS2, it was heat. From the PS2 to the PS3, 360 era was heat. And that era, the PS4, Xbox One era, just kind of seemed like... I think PlayStation knew that they won, and they won early on, and that was just kind of it. And now everyone's on PC, and I feel like that's just the way it is. Physical media, legacy media, that's what it's being called, if I recall, is kind of going away. And it hurts me. It hurts me in my core, in my belly, in my soul. But it never will go away. I just don't think it will, because I think that, like, last week I talked about how the Xbox Live marketplace, the Xbox 360 marketplace, got shut down, and now it's like, oh, here's this other thing that is getting taken away, that's physical media. And how GameStop tweeted, I bet you wish you had physical games now. I think we're going to hit a point where physical games make a comeback. Right now it's about convenience and whatever, and you know, they're taking away the manuals, they're taking away stickers, they're taking away all these things that are in our physical games. And eventually we're going to hit a point where it's okay, if you want physical media, you're going to pay $70 for the disc and the case, and then you're going to pay $80 for the disc and the case and a manual, and you're going to pay $90 for the disc, the case, the manual, and a map, and then you're going to pay $120 for the disc, the case, the manual, the map, and maybe a collector's edition that has a little Funko Pop thing that's going to be with it. Everything is in cycles. Trends are in cycles. We are leaving physical media, and it'll be back. I've been saying it for years, and I saw that it, I believe it happened in Brooklyn or Portland, I don't remember, a hipster mecca. blockbusters are going to come back. Renting, going to the DVD store, whatever you used to call it, is going to come back. You're going to see people that are renting for $10 a night, DVDs or VHS, and it's going to be, you rent the machine for an extra $30 a night, be it a VHS, be it a DVD machine, whatever, a DVD player. It's coming back. You get all your snacks right there, and what used to be a couple of dollars is going to be a date. It's going to be an experience. It's going to be something that you and I are going to show our kids or maybe our grandkids and be like, this is what it was like, because nostalgia is the one thing they can continuously sell to us. Dr. Doom just got announced. I like comic books. I like the importance of Dr. Doom. I also really like MF Doom, and that's probably why I'm excited for this, because they're going to pander to that crowd as well, because they're going to put one Doom song, whatever. I could talk about this forever, but it's one of those things that they're harping on the nostalgia. Here we go. We're 15 years in, it feels like 15 years into superhero flicks, into cape stuff. And now we're going to give you arguably the biggest of big bads. I thought they should have done Doom when they did Thanos. I think they should have done Doom when they did Ultron. I thought it was the obvious choice was to do Dr. Victor Von Doom. And now we're here because we can sell to you. Someone who is so turned off by a superhero flick. There's very, very few good superhero movies. One of them is the Batman. The other one is the Joker. And that's it. I like the first Captain America. Black Panther's fine. I understand why it's important. Very boring movie. And he dies 25 minutes into the movie, but there's still an hour and a half left, and he's already in four movies. It bothers me. But now we have the loss of Game Informer. It'd be cool if Game Informer could come back as like a Twitter page. I feel like that'd be kind of cool. That just gives us news, but doesn't have like these in-depth interviews or, you know, Game Informer maybe has an idea like how G4 came back as a YouTube and a Twitch channel. But that's a big production, and look what happened to G4. Not even a year later, and as soon as it was here, it was gone. But that's Game Informer, man. A very, very important, pivotal part of me growing up was getting those magazines in the mail. I remember my mom coming home and being like, hey, it was Game Informer and the Lego magazines that would come out every month. Or maybe it was every few months that the Lego mags came out. But I remember that those two being the Toys R Us catalogs. It was big. Here you go. Here you go. Here you go. What do you want? What's in here? What's going on? Flipping through. I have a couple here. I didn't dig through them, but I do have a couple here. It's something that I want to do now that it's over. I've done it before on the show where I go through and kind of talk about Game Informers. I want to do it because I know Kyle has tons of them. I want to go back and look through a couple of them, talk about some stuff, maybe do them as burner episodes where they're full episodes where we talk about them. It's a thing that I'm never going to be able to explain to a younger generation if they weren't there for it. Reading about games, reading about Borderlands, reading about these staples that would have been in my life. I don't think I read about GTA 4, but I definitely read about GTA 5. And just rest in peace to my old paperback friend. I'd like to get into this week's lore, but before I can get into this week's lore, I have to thank the Patreon. Because of the Patreon, the show can continue to grow and get better. And there's some people who I have to thank. I brought it up at the top of the hour, but if you check in the description, little box, little doobly-doo down below, you'll see some links. One of them being to the Ghoulman Entertainment Patreon. Because of these fine folks, the show continues to grow and get better. There's a couple tiers. My favorite, the $10 tier, the Film Live for a Studio Audience tier, where you get to hang out in these episode recordings every Wednesday at about 8:30 Mountain Standard Time. So let me thank these folks that support. This is from the $1 tier all the way to the 10. Starting at the top, I have to thank the OG Noah. Thank you, Noah. After Noah, I have to thank Marcus. Thank you, Marcus. After Marcus, I have to thank Mellow Millhouse. Thank you to Mellow Millhouse. After Mellow Millhouse, I have to thank Captain Lennox. Thank you to Captain Lennox. And last but certainly not least, I have to thank Danish Hound Dog. Thank you to these fine, fine folks that their names are on screen right now. Like I said, because of them, the show has continued to only grow and get bigger and better. If it wasn't for them, my computer troubles may have lasted longer than they actually did. I love you guys. Thank you so much for your support. The lore's coming. So every week I go to the Patreon and I ask a question. I ask a lore question. And turns out, on my laptop, I can't run Fallout 3. And that's why last episode, it was just a still image of Eulogy's pad and Clover. I have this desktop up and running again, and I have to move files around. I should be able to record footage off of it. So if anything, it's going to be a footage machine for a little bit and like a YouTube thing so I can watch television, more or less. So I wanted to go back to New Vegas for obvious reasons. My laptop might be able to run Fallout 4. I have to double check. But I went onto the Patreon and I asked a poll question, and the poll question was about two quest lines in New Vegas, two that I really like, two that I wish I could talk more about characters I could talk more about. And it's GI Blues that involves the Kings or Oh My Papa about the Cons. So if you'd like to hear any lore, and I mean any lore whatsoever from the Fallout series, check out the link in the description below for the Patreon, because even at the $1 tier, your voice, yes, your voice is heard weekly when I ask a poll. And this week's lore comes to us by way of the Ghoulman Entertainment Patreon on the Fallout New Vegas quest, Oh My Papa. Now, what I like about the quest, Oh My Pop, and how I'm going to give you this lore is that it's a lot about the great Khan's history. I don't go super deep. I'm not going to give you every bit of Khan history and existence, but what I am going to give you is a brief overview of who they are and what they are. And the Khans start out really humbly, but they're kind of pathetic the entire time. And that's what sucks. And New Vegas really tries to give the Khans heart. It tries to give them chutzpah. It tries to give them something that they can latch onto, an idea of who they are. And it kind of builds them up a little bit, but the games, the original games, the original two, Fallout 1, Fallout 2, build them up in such a way. In Fallout 1, out of Vault 15 comes a couple different groups. One of them being what would later become Shady Sands and then later become the NCR. And another one is just the Khans. At that time, they were going by just the Khans, right? There's the Vipers and the Jackals and a bunch of other things that come out of it, and probably a bunch of splinter groups. But these are kind of the siblings, the brother, the sister, the Phil and Lil, the twin towers, if you will, of these groups, and both of them will fall. They emerge out of Vault 15 in 2097, and by 2161, they're led by a man named Jarl Deathhand, and the Vault Dweller destroys the Khans in process of saving Tandy. Now, Tandy is the daughter of Aradesh, the man who starts Shady Sands and would later go on to found the New California Republic. And Tandy is a cooped up little girl who just wants to know what's out there. When you get there to Shady Sands, when the Vault Dweller gets there to Shady Sands, she just wants to know about what the outside world is like. But in a bit of irony, she doesn't realize that the life you lead is the exact same life she's led. You and her have been inside. She gets abducted by the Khans. At this point, they're just the Khans. And if you have a high enough skill, you can go there and intimidate them and say that you're the ghost of a former member and scare them all away and take her. You can kill them all. There's a couple different ways to do the quest, but the definitive Fallout 2 handbook that has the lore of what happened in the first game is that the Vault Dweller kills all of the Khans and takes Tandy back to Shady Sands. And Tandy would later become president of the NCR and one of the longest and most beloved presidents of the NCR. Now, the only person that is left from the Khans after the Vault Dweller kills them all is a man by the name of Darian. And by 2241, Darian is squatting in the remnants of Vault Teen, where his ancestors came from. Him and the rest of the NCR. So here we go again with that dichotomy. We go with the sibling metaphor I was using earlier. If that even is a metaphor, maybe it's a simile. One's like the other. Anyway, it's these two sides of the same coin. One had positive intention, the other one had negative intention. We can build and we can make what we want, the other is we can take. And we always come back to our roots. So Darian is in Vault 15. He plants a spy in NCR Congress as the new Khans. When he takes over, they're the new Khans by 2241. And he has his Khans, the new Khans, attack NCR caravans for food and water. President Tandy, remember the little girl Tandy who got kidnapped that I was talking about earlier? Tandy hires the Chosen One, the descendant of the Vault Dweller from Vault 13, to get computer parts from Vault 15 that the NCR needs, and the Chosen One brokers a deal with the squatters that are there to kill Darian to get the parts. The squatters are then given access to NCR land via annexation. So Vault 15 becomes official land of NCR. And this kind of changes depending on where the lore will dictate where Shady Sands is because of the show now. Because of the show, I don't really feel like I should say spoilers, but spoilers. Shady Sands seems to be more in LA, which is way north than it was in the original game. And I'm sure we're going to hear about where that is and what happened. But 15 is not far from this. And now 15 and Shady Sands are closer together, becoming part of the same unit, the same piece of the five states of the NCR. By 2267, the Great Khans have rebuilt, made a name for themselves, and have moved into the Mojave 14 years before the events of New Vegas. By 2278, this is Bitter Springs. This is arguably the Great Khan's biggest battle. This is the one that the Khans talk about, the NCR talk about in-game. So this happens a year after the first Battle of Hoover Dam. The first Battle of Hoover Dam is 2277, and depending on who you ask, the NCR wins. I don't really think they won. I don't really think they lost. If anything, it feels like a stalemate. Khaizar feels like they lost because he's Khaizar, and if he doesn't conquer, he didn't win. He can look at that as okay, we didn't win, but we didn't lose. It very much feels like a draw, right? So by 2278, tensions are high with the NCR. People back home on the West are like, why are we fighting Kimball's war? This is so unnecessary. We don't need a Mojave campaign. Kimball wants his own legacy. Four NCR troops that are patrolling the Mojave get captured by Khans, and they're murdered. And once NCR has word of this, and mind you, the NCR and the Khans have always been at war. Shady Sands is building, all of them get wiped out because they abduct Tandy. Not saying it's right, but, you know, look at it from their perspective. They're doing what they know, and then someone comes in and changes and ruins all that. They're not going to like those people, right? Then NCR comes in because they want computer parts, and all of the people turn and kill their leader. And now the NCR is the biggest entity in the wasteland, and we take four of their people and we kill them, and the NCR completely annihilates every single person in Bitter Springs, which was a Khan camp. It was originally a national park, and now the Khans have control of it. Pre-war was a national park. The Khans have control, and they get completely wiped out. And it's not just that they kill the other soldiers. They kill the women, the children, the elderly, the sick. The NCR commits war crimes. And yes, it isn't modern day, so we don't have like, okay, you can't attack women, you can't attack children, you can't attack the elderly, sick, places of worship, you can't attack hospitals. They don't care. They took them all out. And the NCR never reports on this. They never tell anybody on the West that this goes on. And a lot of the Khans have a lot of bad blood towards NCR from the past, but also from this. One of my favorite pieces of New Vegas ever is the All Roads comic. It touches upon how Jessup, McMurphy, and Chance can't get over it, and he uses drugs to numb the pain of the Battle of Bitter Springs. Now, by September of 2281, Carl, a fumentari of Caesar's Legion, convinces the Khans that joining the Legion is of their benefit. He doesn't explain that if the Khans join the NCR, they're going to completely lose their culture. And Regis is his right-hand man. Now, for the quest itself, that was a lot of backstory, but for the quest itself, there's a couple ways you can do it. You can go talk through Colonel Moore at the NCR. You can just stumble upon them and kind of start the quest yourself. You can probably hear about them through going through Quarry Junction. You can talk to them if you go to the Khans drug camp. There's a bunch of different ways that you could find out about the Khans, talk to people. You could even talk to Jessup, and he might tell you a thing or two about the Khans and where they're located. Once you get to the longhouse in Red Rock Canyon where the Khans are set up, you can talk to Papa Khan, and you can tell him about how you feel about the Legion, how he feels about the Legion. And even if you say to him, hey, I really feel like you should reconsider your allegiance with the Legion, he'll just flat out say no. And when you go to leave the longhouse, you'll be forced into a conversation with a man named Regis. And Regis is his right-hand man, like I said, but he goes, hey, I want to know what you think, because if you think this is bad, then maybe it is, because I had the same thoughts, but I'm not going to go up against my Papa Khan, like that. So you can find Carl's notebook, and you can see how it references who the Khans are, who he believes the Khans are. Papa Khan will read us a piece of it later on in the quest, and it refers to them as mindless savages. And on the wiki, I get all of my lore off of fallout.fandom.com, the Wikipedia, if you will. The transcript says, the journal consists of detailed records and observations from Carl's time with the Great Khans. Many of the entries go into great detail about his opinion on their savage, barbaric customs. And at several points, he waxes philosophic about how it's very likely that Caesar's Legion will have to execute a lot of them. He does not respect them. He promises a woman named Melissa, who's at Quarry Junction, who you can speak to, and I'm going to be speaking about a little bit later. He promises her a higher up position in Caesar's Legion, but women don't serve. Women are breeding stock. They don't exist for anything but to further the army that is Caesar's Legion. Even after you have the journal and you tell him that in this journal are some things I do not believe in, Papa Khan will still say, no, this is good for the Khans, for the Great Khans. This will make the Great Khans greater. And again, if you speak to Regis, he's like, look, you have my back, especially with this information. You have to go talk to the other three commanding officers, the three confidants that Papa Khan has, people that he will listen to. So you have to talk to Jack, Diane, and Melissa. Now, the Khans, which I really haven't brought up, but the Khans make a lot of their money through chem sales. It's very much established that the Khans make the good shit, the best shit, the high quality. That I know I like the good shit. My wife buys the tasteless choice bullshit kind of shit that they make, right? They make the high end. They make that Tuco Salamanca tight shit, right? So you have to go to talk to Jack and Diane, and they're the chem makers. They're the peddlers, the pushers for the Khans. And if you bring to Jack and Diane's attention that the Legion vehemently outlaws chems, he's like, oh, whoa. Because he even says, it's not a direct quote, but he's like, I don't care who's in charge. As long as I can make and sell my drugs, I'm cool. And once you point out that Caesar does not enjoy the consumption of chems, he's like, yeah, no, I'm out, especially with the information you've given me. I don't really care. And if you go talk to Melissa, a woman who I brought up briefly prior, and you say to her that you were promised a higher position, but women don't serve. Even Regis says, I've never seen a woman in Legionnaire's armor. Once she finds out about this and realizes she's been lied to, she then turns her back on the Legion's incorporation, the Khan's incorporation into the Legion. And once you've given Regis the journal, Carl's journal that you find in his room at the Longhouse in Red Rock Canyon, he is on your side, but he's pretty much on your side from jump. Now, there's a couple different endings because it's New Vegas, and if this thing is lousy with anything, it's bugs and endings. You could bring all the evidence and word from his four advisors and he'll hear you out, and if he does and you explain everything to him, he will kill Carl. I believe his exact quote is something along the lines of, kill this dog, and if he doesn't run fast enough, attack the dog, and if he doesn't run fast enough, kill him where he stands. And they'll kill Carl in the Longhouse. Now, you could skip all this. If you go an NCR route, you can skip all of this, go to Red Rock, and just murder the Khans. There's not that many of them. I kind of wish the Khans had a bigger presence. It talks about how they kind of get to the Mojave and are setting up. You would have thought in the 14 years they'd have a bigger area covered, but also this game was made in 18 months. Which is a feat. I'm not saying that as a downside. It's an amazing feat that it even happened in those 18 months. You can go there and just murder them. And the NCR is like, hey, thanks, we appreciate it. And then you just kind of go back. You're like, that's one less thing to worry about. Now, there's another way you can get the Khans to join the NCR. There's a couple things that you could do. They could either leave the Mojave. The courier kind of makes a point that Papa Khan wants reverence. He wants a legacy. He wants to bring his people into a new era and show that they are a force to be reckoned with, that they're strong people with morals. And it's a thing that the book does a lot more than the game does, All Roads does, is that it shows that Jessup, McMurphy, and Chance love each other. And they might not say, hey, bro, I love you, but they care for one another. When Benny goes to turn on Chance because he's having a PTSD episode, he shuts it down. Chance and McMurphy, shut it down. And they're like, no, he's ours. He's one of ours. I don't care how much money this is worth. If he dies at your hand, Benny, it's over. It's wraps. It's done. They respect one another. There's a culture there. There's an understanding. And you can say, look, leave the Mojave, not because you're being kicked out, but it's going to be beneficial for you in the long run to leave the Mojave. Or they can integrate with the NCR, or at least help the NCR win in the Battle of Hoover Dam. But it's more or less a suicide run. They're going to fight for this cause that doesn't really do much for them. And it's going to get them maybe a little bit of reverence where the NCR won't shoot on sight, but it's not, there's so little of them, it's not worth it. Or they can just side with the Legion if you don't talk to them, if you just kind of leave them be. That's what I did my first run, because I didn't really go to Red Rock and I didn't really know much about them. Also, my first run, I did a Yes Man one, and I thought that me going, oh, hey, I'm going to ignore these people, was the charisma-based run. I was a silly 11-year-old. If you don't interact with them and let the cons integrate with the Legion, they lose all of who they are. The end slide narrated by Papa Khan is, as reward for their loyal service, Khaizar forcibly integrated the Great Khans into the Legion. The sick, the elderly were killed, and the women sold as wives to ranking officers, and the tribe's identity was annihilated. Though many Great Khans mourned the death of their tribe, many more were ultimately satisfied with the revenge against the NCR. So, how much are you willing to sell yourself for your dream? How much are you blinded by your dream? Here is the force that is constantly, and I mean constantly, taking advantage of you from Jump Street, right? And here's our chance to get back at them. And I'll give up everything in my power. I won't think about the next generation or the generation after that, or maybe even after that. But I'll give up everything to see my enemy fall. And Caesar wins. Caesar, I remember, I was thinking about this as I was writing these notes. The first time I ever did a Caesar run, I took my 360 to my grandma's house, and I just like posted up in her living room and played New Vegas for like 30 hours straight. I don't remember why. I don't remember how old I was. I think I was in high school. I just think I wanted to get out of the house for the weekend. I didn't do anything. I didn't hang out with my friends, nothing. I just played New Vegas for like a weekend straight. And I remember getting to the end of the Caesar run, and I also did it as a survival run, I'm pretty sure. But I get to the end of the Caesar run, and I remember being like, oh, I really messed up. I really did the wrong thing. I really did a dirty thing here by doing this. Very, very sad ending. If at the end of the quest, one asks Papa Khan to ally with the NCR and then tells him to stick around, the quest will remain open for the player character to solve via talking to Regis and or Colonel Moore, and you assassinate Papa Khan. So, depending on which way it goes, it either becomes entirely NCR, or maybe Regis takes it in a whole new direction. If all the commanders at Camp Forlorn Hope are assassinated for the corresponding Khaizar quest, Papa Khan will inform the player character that upon his death, they will become the new chief. Simply stealth kill Papa Khan when he goes to bed, report to Regis and tell him who the Khans are to ally with, NCR, Legion, or Independent, and this will result in Khan fame and Papa Khan's unique armor and loot. Halfway through the quest, one can randomly be attacked several times by two recruit legionaries who say Carl sends his regards. If one fast travels to and from a Red Rock location, they hide behind rocks at the bottom of the hill to the longhouse. That's Oh My Papa. The quest name is referenced to a song by the guy who played Gomer Pyle. I wish the Khans had a bigger role. There's only very little Khan quests in New Vegas, and there's such a legacy in the Fallout pantheon that I wish they showed up a little bit more. They've been there since, you know, the 90s, man. They've been there for 25 plus years in little drips. They weren't in 3 in New Vegas, or 4, obviously. They are in New Vegas because of where it is. But, you know, it's nice to see them return, and hopefully if we see season 2 of the Fallout show, we get to see a little bit of the Khans in the future. But I hope you enjoyed that, because that is this week's lore. Hey, welcome to segment 3, ladies and ghouls. How are ya? So Fallout London has come out, and if you've been around for a while, my stance has always been that mods don't count. It's super neat. I've seen very, 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 very minimal footage, and it's super, super dope. I love the British. I love the French, but I love the British. The British have been here for what feel like day one. I want to shout out the UK homies. They've been around forever. Apparently Fallout goes dumb hard in the UK. Mr. Tom Flood, which I can never thank him enough, went to the Fallout event and like shouted us out at the Fallout event. And was like, listen to Atomic Radio Hour. And you know, I have a feeling that's going to be one of those events for me. I get a little like misty talking about it. I have a feeling it's going to be one of those events for me that I'll be on my deathbed and I'll think about that moment because I touched somebody that doesn't live in my state that I don't know personally, but lives in another country. And it's fucking wild to me that it happened. And you know, Lamp, who's been around since pretty much episode one, the Tubby Master, who's been here. I just want to shout out, there was a woman, I don't remember her name, I'm so sorry. If she still listens, she was like, we were three episodes deep, and she, I remember, was from the UK, and that's when I realized how hard Fallout goes in the UK. So Fallout London comes out, and it's a great idea. And Todd said they don't really want to focus on anything outside of the US, which makes sense because of the Americana and like that jingoism that they really play into in the later Fallout games, in 3, in 4, in 76. And it's cool to see it, and I keep seeing Instagram videos where people are like, a brand new Fallout game came out and you can play it directly inside of Fallout 4. And it's like, it's not a new game. It's not a new Fallout game. It's fanon. It's fanfic. And I'm not saying anything bad about fanfic. Fanfic's fantastic. If you find it yourself inspired by something that you want to write fiction based in that world, go right ahead. It's fantastic. There is going to be a piece of Fallout London, I have no doubt in my mind, that is going to become canonized. That's just kind of what I feel like Bethesda is going to do. Whether it's a piece of writing that's going to show up in the show or in a future game or an expansion for 76, we're going to get a piece of that that's canonized because it's a tremendous amount of work that they've done. And good for them. Bully for them. Like, I'm so happy that people, it's a team. It's not just one guy who's like, hey, I'm going to put my buddy in the game because I had that idea. I was going to put a friend of mine in Fallout 3 as a companion, and I don't understand how the GEC worked. I was just trying to figure shit out, but like, it's a story. It's a quest line. There's multiple quest lines. There's things to do. You go to a new area. Like I said, I've seen very little things, but there are references to a lot of YouTubers and Fallout personalities that show up. Let me know if you've played it. I know some people in the Discord have said that they have tried it or have wanted to try it. I would love to know what your thoughts on it are. If I should give it a look-see at some point in time, I have a feeling mods, big mods like this might be coming to console. Maybe not so much like with Bethesda games because there's already a weird gray area there. But I heard that like something big for RP servers is coming to GTA 5 on PS5 next year. I don't know how true that is. I didn't really look into it. I just saw that it was, quote, happening, unquote. But let me know what you think about Fallout London, because I'd love to hear someone else's opinion from someone who's actually played it. Thank you for joining us. My name is Vince. This has been Atomic Radio Hour, episode 316. I love you guys very, very much. The intro music is by the one and only Shane Ivers. It's called Feather Duster, but you can get all of his heaters over at silvermansounds.com/free music. In the description below are links to my Twitter, the show's Twitter, and Kyle's Twitter, along with the Redbubble where you could buy a design. Or if you like the show, you can check out the Patreon. There's a couple tiers. $10 tier being the best, where you can watch these episodes live. I want to thank the Patreon one more time. I love you guys so very much. Thank you for being here. Like I said at the top of the hour, no live episode next week. There should be, so next Wednesday, no live episode. There should be an episode. I have access to my PC again. I should be able to get back into it, get some files out of it. There's some things that I have ready and prepared for you guys or need to be edited, what have you. I love you all very, very much, and I'll be seeing you quite soon. Be safe, tip your waitress, I love you, and I'll see you next week. Cool!
Atomic Radio Hour Podcast.
A Ghoulman Entertainment Production.